Okay, let's look at...
What are the choices there?
But the spirit of the depth says, here I am, second column, 230, about two-thirds of the way down. No one can or should halt sacrifice. Sacrifice is not destruction. Sacrifice is the foundation stone of what is to come. Have you not had monasteries? Have not countless thousands gone into the desert? You should carry the monastery in yourself. The desert is within you. The desert calls you and draws you back. So, the destruction of... what Jung now interprets this to mean is the destruction of the war was the necessary destruction of an old worldview. Tragically so, because that old worldview, if it had been seen as needing to die, wouldn't have taken a war to kill it.
Yeah.
Taken a war to kill it.
But that attitude still lives today, doesn't it? That wanting the gaiety of life and more things, and
yeah.
I mean, it's only maybe been replaced with materialism, mm-hmm. but it's still around.
Mm-hmm.
Like Marie Louise von Franz said, PPFF.
Yeah,
it's still that. And
mm-hmm.
What's that?
That prestige, power, fame, and fortune. She said was she was always using that as the spirit of the times.
Mm-hmm.
That's the spirit of the times, and still is.
PPFF. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the values we value.
Materialism
is
the first
thing. Right.
Mm-hmm. You're still trying to destroy the other with the outside. Therefore, right now, we have to destroy our emotional soul. The other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think...
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the last sentence that you left off.
Oh, go, well, Larry.
Are you for solitude?
If you were fettered to the world of this time with iron, the call of the desert would break all change. Truly, I prepare you for solitude.
This is somewhat pessimistic, but realistic.
It's to be 35 and be hearing that's depressing, I think. Because
mm-hmm.
it was telling him he had to pull back, I think. And, you know, the desert within you, the monastery within you, and I think the implication is, and the war within you.
Hmm.
This is what has to be solved. The war within has to be solved if the war without is not going to have to take place.
Is this sacrifice, referring to here, he's saying sacrifice is not destruction. It's the foundation stone of what's to come.
Right.
So the sacrifice, in the right, in his sense of the word, in the meaning that he gives it,
mm-hmm.
is this destruction of the old that needs
yep.
to die.
Okay. Yep. I would say basically it's the destruction of those two world wars, and it broke down. You know, your arrogance, sectarianism, certitude, all that kind of stuff. The response comes as mercy. That even though he's facing this period of isolation and looking at his inner war, he does not lack for hope. And then he says, the spirit of the depths in me was at the same time the ruler of the depths of world affairs. Bottom of 230 to 231. So, the spirit of the depths was what he dreamt of in the dreams that follow. Do I need to read it, or are you familiar with it? Maybe.
I have one.
Yeah.
Is it
Am I going way too far when I look at word choice? Because I just think that all the emphasis on art, when he says the desert calls you and draws you back, and that often comes out in an artistic form of expression. I mean, is even that level of word choice using draws instead of pulls, for example?
Draw like in drawing?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the desert calls you, and then the output is typically something artistic. But, I mean, that's...
Whether it be that pun would play all out in German is another question.
Yeah, and is it too much to look that far into... say that it did play out. Is it too much to look that far into the words, or is that reasonable?
I wouldn't say so. Because come to think of it, no. I don't think it's too far. I don't think it's wrong to do it. Here it might be, because that in German, draw and draw are two different words.
Okay.
Ziehen is to draw back. Zeichen is to draw.
Okay.
And, you know, there might be some sort of etymological link there, but I wouldn't go that far here. At times I think you can, though.
Okay.
Why don't, Jane, why don't you read it for us, that dream?
Starting with...
It happened?
It happened in October of the year 1913, as I was leaving alone for a journey. That during the day I was suddenly overcome in broad daylight by a vision. I saw a terrible flood that covered all the northern and low-lying lands between the North Sea and the Alps. It reached from England up to Russia and from the coast of the North Sea right up to the Alps. I saw yellow waves, swimming rubble, and the death of countless thousands.
Yeah, go on.
This vision lasted for 2 hours. It confused me and made me ill. I was not able to interpret it. 2 weeks passed, then the vision returned, still more violent than before, and an inner voice spoke. Look at it. It is completely real, and it will come to pass. You cannot doubt this. I wrestled again for 2 hours with this vision, but it held me fast. It left me exhausted and confused, and I thought my mind had gone crazy.
Yeah, okay. So you get an idea of what was going on in the spirit of the depths. His unconscious was picking up the war that was started in 1914, if you remember. World War One.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In the paragraph below that, he talks about dreaming that a terrible cold descends.
Yeah, why don't you read that? We'll do both of them. Go ahead, read that. From then on.
From then on, the anxiety toward the terrible event that stood directly before us kept coming back. Once I also saw a sea of blood over the northern lands. In the year 1914, in the month of June, at the beginning and end of the month, and at the beginning of July, I had the same dream 3 times. I was in a foreign land, and suddenly, overnight, and right in the middle of summer, a terrible cold descends from space. All seas and rivers were locked in ice. Every green living thing had frozen.
Let's read it. Did read to the bottom of the page. Unless you're tired of reading.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
The second dream was thoroughly similar to this, but the third dream at the beginning of July went as follows. I was in a remote English land. It was necessary that I return to my homeland with a fast ship as speedily as possible. I reached home quickly. In my homeland, I found that in the middle of summer, a terrible cold had fallen from space, which had turned everything living into ice. There stood a leaf-bearing but fruitless tree, whose leaves had turned into sweet grapes full of healing juice through the working of the frost. I picked some grapes and gave them to a great waiting throng. In reality, now it was so. At the time when the Great War broke out between the peoples of Europe, I found myself in Scotland, compelled by the war to choose the fastest ship and the shortest route home. I encountered the colossal cold that froze everything. I met with the flood, the sea of blood, and found my barren tree whose leaves the frost had transformed into a remedy. And I plucked the ripe fruit and gave it to you, and I do not know what I poured out for you, what bitter, sweet, intoxicating drink, which left on your tongues an aftertaste of blood.
Okay. Question.
Question. He talks about this thing coming from space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering to myself, is that a more modern concept? Because before Katrina happened, I had a similar dream about a malevolent thing coming from space and destroying people. And then Katrina happened. And he talks about this thing coming from space. And I'm wondering to myself now, is that a more modern conception of the dark aspect of the spirit?
Yeah.
And why from space, do you think?
Yeah, in other words, it might be easier to say what it isn't than what it is. What it isn't is that a product of human effort. In other words, read history books. They'll give you the causes of wars. Oh, this economic imbalance, or this political hatred, or this ethnic conflict. It's described as something we do. And I think the dream says it's something that overtakes us from another dimension.
But it's also coming from the heavens, the traditional seat of goodness, whereas the depths...
Yeah.
That's my...
Well, that's a good point.
That's what is in the back of my mind. You know, now the above is not...
Not so great anymore.
The all goodness.
That certainly makes sense.
And it seems to me that is that a new sort of portrayal, reflecting the evolution of the concept of God?
If you go along your line, I think, we're going to be seeing, one of the main themes here is the dark side of God. Well, it comes from the heaven, that's God. Except it's not a sweet dove, it's a holy terror.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes up will be saving, what comes down will be destructive. Completely reversing the old traditional understanding. I was tempted to say it was the archetypal realm, but I think you're more onto it. And I think that's what struck Jung so much, how traditional ecclesiastical imagery was just being turned on its head in these dreams. As I hear this in my speaking outside of friendly groups, where did Jung come up with this stuff? And it's so Jungian, and it's just maybe what's going on, which you don't know until you look at it from the dreams point of view.
Well, I suppose my dream sort of hinted that natural disasters can be somehow linked into that, but I don't really know that I believe that.
Yeah, well, again, now we have to interpret, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that God comes down and causes war.
Right, I know.
But I think what he's getting at is, there is such a huge part of us that is unknown.
Well, I think my dream links up, the God image with just forces of nature, as like they do in the East.
But see, I would say also that these Katrinas, they are actually the result of the dumb things we've done.
This is true. There's definitely a human element there.
The dam,
the fact of global warming, the absolute disregard of protecting a city,
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
all human stupidity.
True.
And I think where I would go is more, the dream doesn't show it as our stupidity. The dream shows it as something that comes from above, down. And how I would understand that is we are so cut off that it's as if that's mm-hmm. going on. That we make so many bad decisions about the way we live our lives, that it's tantamount to something coming down from heaven. And it could very well be our belief in a good God who will protect us that leads us to ignore. Well, God will take care of it. So that's a possible thing. I just feel so strongly these catastrophes are not without our participation. And of course, we go, well, what do you expect?
Well, the Hades earthquake.
Same. Well, we talked about it last week, the weakness of that infrastructure was a result of historical forces.
Yeah, France really felt guilty. They forgave Haiti all their debt.
In fact,
that's good.
Well, because they had just stripped.
Yeah, they already stripped everything else.
They just stripped it.
Yeah.
And taken everything.
And then you have to pay us for what we stripped off.
And so now they're, you know, looking back and going, oh, so yeah. They forgave Haiti all their debt.
Well, and in terms of monetary debts today, it's really nothing, but that country was so poor, they couldn't pay that back.
Right.
Yeah, it's, I don't think we know how we look from the outside. Okay, so just, you know, I'm always trying to make this practical because we're going to go off into some, you know, very strange sounding symbolic thinking. But this is the reason I think Jung undertook this project. These dreams right here gave him that impetus to say, there's a spirit of the times and a spirit of the depth. Because the spirit, his dreams were so far away from consciousness. But, you know, it wouldn't be so strange today because we're aware of nuclear danger. But I'm not a historian, but from what I've heard him say, nobody in Europe had any idea there would be a war. It just happened at this time. So it's this distinction between what is really going on as seen by the unconscious and then our estimation of what is going on. It's that gap, I think, that motivated him to do this.
So were Europeans surprised then when the war just happened, but then when you look back, you can see that there were things happening that sort of made war inevitable.
Yeah.
Did they come to you? I mean, is that the kind of thing that we're still grappling with now?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, in retrospect, one could say, oh, but at the time, again, as I say, I'm not a history expert by any means, according, just taking what Jung said, people had no idea. In fact, it was just the opposite, that the general idea was, wow, we've got technology, we can now have modern cities, we can get rid of, you know, it was this great belief in progress that ran up against the reality of a conflict.
And like the economic meltdown that came
out of
nowhere.
Yeah.
Well,
was
never
right.
It wasn't nowhere.
And so then what do you do as the people who don't understand the inevitability? Because that seems like it perpetuates it.
So far, it seems hopeless.
And I know a guy who's a very brittle diabetic and also very religious, and he's got to make some pretty big decisions, so he decided to fast. And that's the most idiotic thing you can do when you're diabetic, and no loving, kind God would tell you, but the Bible says that you fast, and if I'm not, you know, and God will protect my body while I go through this process because that's what God demands of me. And then everybody's surprised when he's in diabetic coma, except, you know, for those of us who actually thought it through and said you're going to end up in.
Yeah, it seems to be a basic feature of human nature. But I think, again, putting this work in its historical context, I think there is a movement in the collective unconscious that changes. And it hit Jung in 1913. I think it's hitting more and more people. Will it hit enough people to make a difference? I don't know. I prefer to put my interest in this than in the other.
And why does it hit some people? What is that problem?
I don't know. I don't think there's an answer to that. You know, I think the traditional psychological explanation is, well, a certain type of family upbringing, blah, blah, blah. But I've never found that. We're doing that. Yeah?
I was thinking the religious answer to that is grace, but grace would be an interesting word to use in the context of understanding something that you can't control or that's very dark.
I think it is grace, if you wanted to use that language. And we're going to be seeing all these religious terms are going to be redefined. And that's one of the changes that visions are announcing. We have to... Jung is never throwing out God, but he's redefining everything about God.
Another biblical quote that says, many are called, but few are chosen. And a person I knew once said, but don't feel real good because you're chosen. It's really hard.
That's great. Yeah, Jung used to say, congratulations and condolences.
Yeah, I could tell that.
Yeah. I do think it's... Because he uses the word. Didn't he? What do you say? Not grace, but mercy. Mm-hmm. And it's mercy that he's getting this. And he can be hopeful in it. And I must say, it's why I still am interested in Jung after all these years. I think it is extremely hopeful. It's dark. But if we face it, it can change. To me, that's the hope. Well, let's see. The next bit... I don't know if we need to go through it as closely in the italicized. He's basically saying, you know, don't follow me, seek your own way.
Very different from Christ's I am the way.
Right.
What?
Very different from Christ saying I am the way.
I don't think he said it.
Really? I wasn't there, so I don't know. It's all hearsay. And that there isn't a formula, right?
There's no formula.
Yeah.
We're so familiar with Jung's psychology that we forget to ask, where did it come from? It came from this kind of stuff. So that individuation was his attempt to find a practical understanding of how we can grow without copying somebody else. The last paragraph of the italicized might be worth looking at. The one eye of the Godhead is blind. The one ear of the Godhead is deaf. The order of its being is crossed by chaos. So be patient with the crippledness of the world and do not overvalue its consummate beauty. I think there it we're back to the paradoxical God image. And that is another key point of Jung's. Again, all these major ideas, books worth in that last sentence, that God needs us because God can't see. We have, our consciousness is the consciousness that gives God access to knowing.
We give God access to knowing about...
Through what's going on in the world.
Oh, okay.
You know, and that's as simple as you have to tell your dreams what it's like out here. You have to dialogue with your dreams. Because we'll get some things right and some things they just don't seem to understand. That's a very, you know, prosaic example of that.
Can I just ask you something?
Yeah.
In the section before the italicized, you know, twice he refers to a healing juice and the bittersweet intoxicating drink. And then refers to it as an aftertaste of blood. So is that like a, the combination of the healing, is it the wound and the healing is...
I think it's Jungian psychology. That, where does he say it? The fruit that he gave, the drink that he gives, is Jungian psychology.
Oh, okay.
And Jungian psychology came out of his trying to make sense of those dreams. And I've always said I thought Jungian psychology was a response to World War One.
So the aftertaste of blood would be the understanding of sacrifice?
Could be. Here you're, everybody's spinning is just as good as anybody else's. Where I went with it is, this is serious stuff.
And there's that idea of this spiritual essence of a thing being symbolized by blood. That fits in with the idea of his psychology and what he has to offer.
It's also the Ecclesiastical images, blood and what.
Yeah, it's exactly what he's doing. He's reinterpreting the New Testament, without a doubt, in my mind anyway. You want to know what the blood of Christ is? Solve the war problem.
One of the good things about technology is that we can't claim ignorance anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
We can't claim ignorance anymore.
Oh, okay.
I think the fact that, you know, we are so closely linked now, you know, was that shot in that, remember that takeover in Mumbai, the terrorists, and the whole thing was broadcast live by cell phone.
We don't have the comfort of time anymore.
We don't have the comfort of time. And again, it makes the world more dangerous, but if we go with the spirit of the depths, it could be part of the pressure that we really pay attention to how we're going to get along.
That's true.
I absolutely think that. And it ups the ante, and... Anyway, again, I think I find it beautiful. Barriers are being broken down. Arrogances are being rubbed out. Just for me, for example, I've been reading novels written by Muslims. I would have never done that 10 years ago. Understanding how do they see us? Why do they hate us? There's a wall that's broken down. I remember the first time in French we read just a little, you know, we were still at the very beginning. We read like a paragraph in one of these, you know, 101 books written by a French-speaking African Muslim. I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever read. I can't believe they're making us read this crap. See, that was one of my walls. And now I find it so fascinating. So I think that's part of what the spirit of the depths is trying to get to happen, is a broader vision. Get out of our little boxes.
But it is happening in China with, you know, every time they crack down on the internet, the people there who are savvy figure out a new way in. So Google can hardly operate in China. There's, you know, thousands of sites that they're not allowed to hit. And people are going underground and finding ways in. And so now all of a sudden to have a Western wedding is major. That's culturally a major deal, to have a Western wedding dress and party and everything. And And we're finding out more and more quickly what some of the human rights violations are, and the government, and
yeah.
You've got a whole bureau that's just trying to tamp down communication, and it's not working.
Right. Yeah, I think walls are breaking down, and that's one of the, you know, if you think about sort of what, at least in my mind, Jungian psychology has offered, it's a way to find an ecumenical respect for various religions. And that's one of the juices that came out of the cold, the horrible things that were going on, somehow has produced a creative mode of understanding that can serve us. That's how I understand that. The cold and the fruit bit. It wasn't in the Riviera that he got that. It was in that dark night of the European war.
One of the sentences right before you read that last paragraph in the italicized on page 231, he says, and I just think this, he just had a, this shows how he must have had a profound trust in the process of life. He says, give humanity dignity and trust that life will find a better way.
Where's that, Jane?
The sentence right above the last paragraph in the italicized section, right there at the bottom, before redefining the soul. You know, the paragraph right above that.
Mm-hmm. The very last, oh, I see, yeah, very yeah.
And then there's a sentence right above that one. It says, give humanity dignity and trust that life will find a better way.
Show me on your page where that is.
It's right here.
It's the paragraph.
It's the sentence right above that last paragraph.
Right there. Both those sentences.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm good together.
Yeah.
You've got to trust in this process, I think.
There's a sentence before this.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying the sentence before
that. Read it for us.
Well, it says, power stands against power, contempt against contempt, love against love.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a negative right. Point of circle.
Sorry. And right before that, the question we were talking about earlier of the church and the community, therefore give people dignity and let each of them stand apart so that each may find his own fellowship and love.
Yeah.
That would almost define individuation, wouldn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anything else on that?
Jared, can you tell us one time that people who loved and appreciated him wanted him to become like a minister and a prophet?
Well, I think there was a tendency to idealize him, definitely.
And then he said, no.
I think he just got nasty.
That I'm a, he said, I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I am. Let the theologians do that.
Yeah.
I want to do that. So that might have been more now that we've read this. Or, you know, like, don't put me in that boat. It's
definitely.
Bad enough already. You're not following your own self.
Yeah, because they always said that he resisted anybody who wanted to project the Father on him, you know, and he wouldn't have that. And so, you know, this is definitely going away from that father-child image
right.
Of God in relationship. And if you're a minister, you know, that's the same thing they do to ministers. Be God to us. Answer my issue.
It says in that footnote 28, one should not turn people into sheep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it says, speak and write for those who want to listen and read, but do not run after men. I just think
that's lovely,
that
huh?
Speaks yeah. To what you were saying.
Where is that?
28.
Yeah. One should not turn people into sheep, but sheep into people. Mm-hmm.
I believe those last three paragraphs of the italicized
mm-hmm.
Stand one against the other. That's almost like a paradox of the divine, isn't it?
How do you mean, Carmen?
Pardon?
How do you mean stand against each other?
Well, excuse me. Let them stand apart so that you can find his own fellowship.
Oh, I see.
Beautiful. And then the next one is power stands against power, contempt against, against love, which is certainly...
They kind of contradict each other, you're saying. Yeah.
Well, against and apart.
Both.
That's not the same thing.
Well, I don't mean against them. They're fighting each other. They just have different, you know, opposite values.
I've been reading the Eliot's Four Quartets, and in the beginning of it, it just reminded me of the spirit of the depth and the spirit of the time, because he talks about just the beginning is time present and time past are both perhaps present and time future contained in time past. Then he talks about the still point of the world and the dance, and to allow but a little consciousness to be conscious is not to be in time, but only in time can the movement, can the moment in the rose garden, the moment in the arbor where the sun, where the rain beats, the moment in the droughty church at Smokefall be remembered, involved with past and future. Only through time, time is conquered. It was just interesting to read.
Yeah, he had that sense.
Yeah, along with...
Mm-hmm. Kind of a mystical and here and now sense.
Mm-hmm. But it's just, if you want to, you know, take a look at it, it's interesting to read along with this. It's the Four Quartets by T.S. Eliot.
Yeah. Ready for more, a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could probably look at a picture next. This is the page. Whoops, wait a minute, what did I do? There. That's what we're looking at. You want to kill the lights, and... What do you make of it?
Is this for the new section? Or the
yeah,
section?
This is for the new section.
Okay, which is
refinding the soul.
But if you look at the German, I got a little confused about why they said refinding.
What's the German say?
Die Wiederfindung,
yeah,
which is recovery. Wiederfindung is recovery.
It can be refinding.
It can be?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought, I mean, to me, the in St. John are the three flowers on the left,
yeah,
and the four that are in the tea with
right.
Love. And that, what the numbers three and four signify, I guess, in terms that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Possibility in the three.
Right.
And then the four, completion, wholeness, integration.
You know, somewhere there was an active imagination, and they talked about solving the problem. Solving the problem, you have to go back not only to your ancestors, but even back to previous times. And didn't he always emphasize that there was the earth, I mean, there was plant life, there
yep.
was animal life,
yep.
and then there's human life, and then there's, you know,
vegetation.
Well, God-man combo. In that respect, you know, you're seeing the first layers of life, the plant, vegetative life, and also the animal life, which can also be a messenger of the spirits.
Also, if you go back to this one, this image, and then look at the gold flowers within the D.
This one?
Uh-huh. You can see those things that were poisonous now have become gold.
Oh.
What goals align with
the flowers
within the letter itself?
Yes, within the letter itself. So those little bells.
We figured those little bells were poisonous, didn't we?
Isn't that what you said, Carol? But those
foxgloves. The foxgloves spike. The blue ones are the monk's food. Mm-hmm. And then the foxgloves, the orange, and the spike is the one with the teens.
Yes, so then if you go forward again, I was seeing the spike, isn't that the one on the left inside the W?
Yeah.
And then the ones with the little bells. Now if you go forward again, you'll see them within the D, they have now turned to gold.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah.
Spike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You think of that as
yeah, you can see the, well, you can see the little bell-shaped flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, nice.
Yeah. Brilliant.
It's just the beginning for probably for D.
D.
Yeah. Uh-huh. D. Vira Sindung is the name of that section. So that's the D and the.
Oh. Do you follow what these letters are? Everybody follow what these are?
No, I don't
know.
It's, you know, in the medieval manuscripts, they would embellish the first letter of a new section. And so Jung has just done the same thing. So that D, the D in German, the first sentence is D, D-I-E, which is the.
Okay.
So that D is the would be like a T for us if he was writing in English. And the same with the S. It's I don't remember what exactly it is in German, but
it's Seele, is it?
Seele.
It's spirit.
Does
that
have any meaning here?
Huh?
Does it have?
Ah, well, that's my question to you.
Mm-hmm. Peace, hope.
Yeah, and
spirit,
Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Oh,
and Sophia. Messages from God.
Messenger from God.
Messages.
Oh, messages of God.
Yeah.
Or
spirit.
I have this idea, but it's something I will keep my eye on to see whether it bears out, that the painting has a kind of a compensatory meaning to the text. Maybe not exactly compensatory, but, you know, we'll see. He talks about desire, desiring the world. That's what part of this next section is about. And, of course, you know, it's a 35-year-old man living in a big house by the lake. I'm sure you have plenty of desire. And how do you come to terms with that? And what he depicts is not an image of desire, but image of soul. So just keep that in mind. Whether that's going to bear out throughout all these visions, I don't know. But it seemed to me... you know, we talked about that as he draws a picture of a church in between two flows, maybe the spirit of the time versus the spirit of the depth. But yet he really emphasizes the spirit of the depth in his text. But the painting puts the spirit of the times in the center, the town, the village. And I don't know about that. I have to think about that. But it's just something to keep in mind, whether there is a, like, as it is the painting itself a comment on what he's writing.
Another place I think of the dove is when Noah and the ark and they're out in the water and he sends up a dove to that land. Find a new land.
I think that's very important, actually. So that, remember, he's about to go into a really lonely, confusing time. And, you know, he could, with that extra energy, join a country club. But instead, he goes, writes in his dreams every night. And must have been thinking, am I just a nutcase? And so in that line, I think the picture is saying, you're about to go on Noah's ark and go through a really rough time of a flood, but there will be a grace that follows. All of those are possible, I think. I can't say one way or the other. Sometimes I get a feeling, but I think 3 to 4 is a pertinent comment. So is the fact that the poison has become gold, so that all the negative thoughts he's going to have are going to become creative, or what he might feel like is a poisonous withdrawal from life is going to produce something of value.
Well, and the color of the blue,
yeah, that was the color of the two flows that Kathy talked about last time. Well, anyway, you know, I don't think we can say in any of these pictures anything definitive, but maybe we all pull our heads together and we'll come up with some approximation.
But, you know, that sailboat, that just really got to me. That's right smack dab in the middle, too, in the front of the church. And
look at the fish, too.
Well, not only that, but the way that you have to sail, you can't get there directly in a straight line. You have to tack. You know, you with the wind. I mean, you tack your mainsail left and right until you get to. So it's very much like individuation. It becomes a circle, spiral.
So I think that was one of his favorite metaphors for individuation is catching the wind. Mm-hmm. It's this interface between the wind and our working with it that guides us.
And yeah, you have to use. I mean, you're at the mercy of the wind.
Yeah.
If the wind is not blowing, you just sit there and listfully sit.
Yeah.
So the wind really determines your whether you move or not.
Yeah.
And so you are really secondary in that power.
Right.
And then he was in his dream, he was in the boat in the middle of summer, and he's in the middle of the letter. And
was he in the boat? That's right. It was like the third dream.
Right. I mean, we hadn't gotten to that point yet in the discussion, but it's interesting that, you know, he has to get a boat quickly, and it's in the middle of summer, and he puts the boat in the middle of the picture, and that's just starting the journey to this. And so that gives a similar...
That's a very helpful comment. Yep.
Did you notice the fish?
Yeah.
It takes me back to some of the readings we had.
Of,
Conjunctionis.
Yeah, Ion and Mercurian, yeah.
So maybe he's anticipating use of those, but that's also a Christian.
Well, I think anticipating, it's because he had these things in his visions and he wrote those books later to figure out why they were in his visions.
But that is also a change of religious image.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
And Jane and I were talking, and she was saying something really interesting about those sea creatures.
That I thought
was really pertinent. I would like to share.
Well, okay, those guys at the bottom of the sea, the lobster and the shellfish, and you even got an octopus, I think, there. But those guys eat the dark fins in the ocean. The rest of the fish don't eat. They clean up the bottom of the sea. And so we were just talking that, you know, the dark things that are undesirable and people want to avoid, these guys go at them and they eat them. And then they digest them and they turn them into edible pieces of food for us. So it's just kind of like another layer of...
It's a transformation through the muck.
You know, a way that somehow that lower levels of life, the vegetative and the animal, somehow prepare these darker things for us to make them digestible for us. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it all, but...
Well, this whole experience was very unpleasant, and I think those animals would be his ability to take all the experience that he's had, rework it, and then turn it into that product, which is Jungian psychology. I guess what creativity does, among other things, it allows you to take what is poison, and then it transforms it.
The flames, since we also have that.
Yeah.
I mean, is that going up or looks like steps almost after it gets up a certain point.
It becomes the snake.
I think it's the snake.
Oh, is this? Okay. I see that now, yeah.
Well, it's 2:30. We probably should stop on time. How much did we get through today?
A lot.
Did we?
Yeah, we finished
page?
The section. We finished the whole section.
Oh. Well, I gave you a mammoth reading assignment. No, just a couple of pages. But, you know, we're going to get through a couple of pages a day at best, I think. To 241, which is what? About six pages or something. How far did I have you read?
Originally 235, I think.
So it's six pages.
Yeah.
Right, stop where it says murder of the hero. We probably won't get that far, but if we do get on a roll, then you'll be that far. 241.
Oh my goodness.
That's a lot.
It's unreal.
Is that too much?
You won't ever get there.
Well, we'll never get there. But you never know. Maybe the Holy Spirit will come down and we'll all understand it and just...
We're not waiting for our sale.
Yeah, yeah.
You're so hopeful.
Thank you.